Hi, Greg Perry, the Historic Preservationist. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 95. So today's episode, we're going to talk about some globe makers, early American globe makers, but who hasn't? And I have many times been at auction and just marveling at some of these floor globes, and some came in pairs and singles, and some 36-inch diameter. Some were models you put on your desk, but just fascinating works of art and masterpieces, even in the metalwork that that holds them and enables them to spin. So just fascinating stuff. So who has not idly spun a globe and had the exhilarating feeling that the world was literally within the grasp? Surely we all remember some yellowed sphere that has stirred us with dreams of faraway lands. As we followed the tracks of the early navigators on its smooth surface, or located remote islands and coasts where our great-great-grandfathers possibly once sailed long ago. Terrestrial and celestial globes have been part of the history of cartography and philosophic thought since the end of the 15th century, when Martin Beyrin of Nuremberg fashioned the oldest existing terrestrial sphere. Records even seem to indicate that as early as the first century before Christ, an attempt to construct a globe was made by one of the great Greek philosophers. After Columbus had proved the world round, a great interest in the newly discovered lands stimulated reproduction of the earth's surfaces by means of globes, and from the time of Beyrin on, we find that part of the science of the expanding world seemed at the tip of our hands. But some of these early spheres were elaborately mounted on metal balls, with the engraving done directly on their surface. They were made by expert craftsmen for the rich noblemen of Europe. Later in the 17th century, France was the prime source of globe-making, and it was not until the 18th century that England became quite prominent in the field when the famous William Carey began to make the globes that bore his name and were shipped to all parts of the British Empire. The sudden demand for these miniatures of the earth came principally with the Pacific explorations of the English navigators. Captain Cook, by his exciting discoveries, turned English eyes eastward, and the growing China trade in the 19th century sent merchants and shipowners peering at globes to find where their interests lay. The stimulation of the demand for globes led to the brisk trade with the mother country and many colonial notables, such as Benjamin Franklin, who ordered globes from many London makers. In spite of the universal interest in geography and exploration, it was not until around 1810 that a Native American began to take advantage of the demand for globes. This pioneer maker was James Wilson of Bradford, Vermont, whose life and works have been well treated by Leroy E. Kimmel in the April 1938 issue of the Proceedings of the American Antiquarian Society. Wilson, though mostly self-taught, received some instruction in engraving from the New Haven engraver, and in 1810, or perhaps even earlier, began to produce globes in his own hometown. Several years later, with his two sons, he started to manufacture in Albany, New York. The globes produced were cheaper then, but equal in quality to, the most important English product available at the time. Mr. Kimball questioned almost 200 libraries, schools, historical societies, and so forth, but he located only 12 specimens. Before Wilson's new American globes made their appearance, the English monopolized the scene. William Carey's, Barden's, Newton's, and Addison's globes were the ones used in schools throughout the country and academies to teach the geography of the earth and the places of the stars in the sky. It was only after the introduction of Wilson's product that the domestic globe began to be recognized as superior to the foreign ones depicting this continent. Maps were the primary source of information, for the engravers who made the plates for the printing of gloves. The American makers had the advantage of English and in being able to keep up with the explorations of this continent, and they enlisted the aid of travelers, explorers, and shipmasters in compiling their discoveries. The maps of Judith Morse, the father of American geography, assisted the globe maker Annan, for whom worked in Boston and did considerable engraving for Morse. William P. Annan worked contemporaneously with Wilson. He died in 1839 at the age of 48 and was buried in the Granary Burying Ground in Boston. Little note was taken of his passing by the papers of the day, and he probably died in poor circumstances, according to Stauffer. Annan was most likely a pupil of Abel Bowen, as he worked for that engraver in 1813 for some years afterward. For a time he engraved under his own name. Then in 1823 and 1824, he engraved a map of Boston with his partner, George G. Smith. The firm of Annan and Smith was well known for its engraving, but whether they actually sold globes is not perfectly clear. It is known, however, that in 1826, Annan took out a patent to make his artificial globes. The details of the patent unfortunately remain obscure, due to the destruction of the early patent records. Nevertheless, it must have been in connection with the method of engraving or printing the plates for the paper gores, which, after being printed, were passed to the ball that was to be put on the globe. The bookseller, Josiah Loring, was the channel through which Annan globes were sold, under Loring's name. Loring, whose shop was on Washington Street in Boston, became famous through these globes. In 1838, he was awarded a silver medal by the American Institute of the City of New York at its annual fair held in Nibbles Garden for the best specimen of celestial and terrestrial globes. So this is one of Loring's globes at the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem. It is inscribed Loring, Boston, 1833. Annan is recognized by Stauffer and Peters as the engraver of these Loring globes. In 1837, a diploma was won by Cyrus Lancaster of Albany for a specimen of terrestrial and celestial spheres exhibited at the American Institute's fair. Lancaster was then head of Wilson's manufactory in Albany, having married into the Wilson family after the death of the latter's two sons. Annan's work was evidently so much admired, as far as drawing and engraving went, that Boston's first globe maker, who called himself by that name, employed Annan to draw and engrave the globes. This was Gilman Joslin, who, in 1737, did engrave his globes and first appeared in the Boston Directory as Joslin Gilman Globe Manufacturer. He established a business that was still going at the turn of the 20th century, and for a good many years after the death of Annan, he continued to carry on the cartouche of his globes, drawn and engraved by W.B. Annan. So by 1843, one Gilbert Vail of New York City took out a patent to make globes. Vail was an extraordinary character who was born in 1788. We find him first at 89 Roosevelt Street as a teacher of navigation. He evidently had a son, Gilbert Vail Jr., who is listed in the directory of 1837 as a printer. He printed a periodical called The Beacon, issued by his father for circulation among the waterfront element. By 1845, this versatile gentleman, Vail Sr., is listed as teacher, editor, and globe manufacturer at 94 Roosevelt Street. In 1856, he turned his hand to another project. He became a publisher of liberal books and ran free reading and coffee rooms at the No. 1 Bowery. He died in 1866 after an eventful and varied career. Vail, was an editor of some talent in addition to his other accomplishments. He wrote A Life of Thomas Paine in 1841, with an appendix containing Paine's letters to Washington, suppressed in his works, at present published in this country. He was also the author of a thin volume called Astronomy and Worship of the Ancients, published at the Beacon office in 1855. In the back of his book is description of Vail's globes and celestial spheres, which he patented in 1843. Taken from this work, this shows the principle of his invention. As Vail says in his explanation of the globe, "The particularity of this globe is that it combines the two globes, celestial and terrestrial, in one instrument, and forms an exact model of nature as it appears to the inhabitants of the earth. The terrestrial globe occupies the center. The celestial globe is represented by the sphere formed in circles, and representing the principal circles and points in the heavens. The sphere is covered at pleasure by a concave, transparent celestial globe in certain sections, beautifully formed, of which one or more can be used at a time, and the outer circle serves to give a swivel motion to the instrument useful in showing the phenomena at the opposite points on the earth." Vail's apparatus was a unique affair that could well bear the production today, but unfortunately, insofar as I am aware, no specimen has come to light. The little-known maker of globes was one Charles Copley, who was listed as an engraver in the New York Directory in 1853. The year before, Copley won a gold medal and a pair of globes at the American Institute of Annual Fair. In 1853, he won a diploma at the same fair for a pair of 15-inch celestial terrestrial globes. No specimen of this maker's globes have ever been found, though. Greg Perry, the historic preservationist, signing out. Thanks for listening.